Morning, Riverview. Everybody doing okay? Rainy weekend here. Don't worry. It's going to be like 58 and sunny at like 4 o'clock today, so you'll be fine. Week 4 of our parables series is today. My name is James. I am the venue pastor here at the Holt Venue. In my home growing up, we had something that I assumed that everyone had in their home, but I came to find out that was not true, and most people didn't even know what it was. How many of you had a puzzle board in your home growing up? Did anybody have one of those? Ooh, a few people. My brothers and sisters right there. So in our home, the puzzle board was like this 5 foot by 5 foot. It was some kind of like a hybrid of like plywood cardboard, this like soft stuff with a little lip around the edge where we would do jigsaw puzzles on this puzzle board. And so the idea was, this was a time, by the way, I grew up in, we didn't have the internet or, video games or cable TV. So I'm, we did other things with our time. And so you would dump the entire box of pieces out on onto the board, and there's room to spread everything out. Everything's kind of contained on there, and it's got a background. You can see everything, flip all the pieces over and begin to figure out what your puzzle is. And you can put it on the floor, on the table. When people come over, had someone in the lobby afterwards said, we used to slide ours under the bed, you could store the unfinished puzzle for later. Now, some of you are like, okay, whatever, puzzle man. We have Netflix now, so we don't, So keep listening. You may learn something here. The key resource that you have if you're going to complete a puzzle is, of course, the box top. Any group of people that are doing a puzzle together, I did buy this puzzle at half price, the Christmas sale there at the Hobby Lobby. The Hobby Lobby is a little scary for me, as an aside. But I did like, there's this little like creepy puppet in this person's stocking on there. I wonder how that child's going to feel about that as their stocking gift. But the idea is, the box top is like the most fought about thing. There's like a group of people, who's got that picture? Because you can see the picture. What is it that I'm trying to make? I've got this, and I'm trying to turn this into that. And so in order to do that, I need to know kind of where I'm going with it. And so that you take the piece out and you look at it on the picture, and then you kind of place it in the spot on the board, and then you begin to take shape. And then all of a sudden they start to fit together a little bit and the picture starts to take shape. Now, the reason I've been thinking about this is this parable that we're studying today. It's called the Parable of the Talents. It's found in Matthew 25. And what's helpful about the parable of the talents is that right after Jesus shares this parable, he gives us the picture. He shows us the box top. As we're piecing together the different elements and characters and plot twists in this parable, we know where Jesus is going. We know what the end is supposed to be, which helps us to navigate the process. One of the things I think we often have trouble with are just putting the pieces together in our lives. I mean, oftentimes our lives kind of feel like this, right? It's like, I can see some color. I see that there's some way that this fits together, but what am I doing here? Often we live the box bottom life instead of the box top life. The box bottom is just blank, right? I mean, there's no picture there. We're just trying, we got nothing. Or we're doing the puzzle, but we're using the backside. All the gray pieces. If you were like a really masochistic person, you're like, this, some of you live your life that way. You're just like, I'm just randomly trying to figure out how all these colorless pieces fit together. Even more so, sometimes we have a picture of what our future is supposed to be like, but it's too short term. Like some of us, our picture is this, right? We're going to be like the super family. This is going to be us. This would be cool if this was your family, by the way. You could have some fun with that. Or for some people, their picture of kind of what they're trying to do is just the friends, like literally these friends on the TV show Friends. Hopefully that's not your picture, but maybe it is what you're trying to do. Or for some people, they're just like, you know what? I just want some donuts. That's all. That's my whole life and whatever it is. Just trying to jack up the donut sales across the Lansing area here this afternoon. Some of you are like, great, now I got to go get a donut. But we all have sort of this, how do we piece it together? And what I love about this parable is that Jesus says, this is what's going to happen. And so before we hear the parable of the talents here in Matthew 25, let's listen to what Jesus said immediately after so that we can have the context, we can have the picture when we study the parable. This is Matthew 25, verse 31. It says this, "When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them one from another, just as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, 'Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me.' And then the righteous will answer him, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or without clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and visit you?' And the king will answer them, 'Truly I say to you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me.' Then he will also say to those on the left, 'Depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels.'" Aren't you glad you sat on this side of the auditorium today, right? "For I was hungry and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger and you didn't take me in. I was naked, you didn't clothe me. Sick and in prison and you didn't take care of me.' And they too will answer, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or without clothes or sick or in prison and not help you?' And then he will answer them, 'I tell you, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me.' And they will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life." Whoa. Now, this is not a parable. This is a literal description from Jesus of the picture of what's actually going to take place. He says, okay, one day the Son of Man, the King Jesus, will return in glory. He's going to render judgment. He's going to reign for eternity. That has not happened yet, but it will someday soon. And in the meantime, he says, how we live now matters. Who we choose to follow now matters, because everyone is going to live forever somewhere, right? And so the urging there, believe in Jesus, follow the king, trust the king, be one of those who serve the king, and therefore inherit the kingdom prepared for them from the foundation of the world. And so keeping that picture in mind as the context, let's hear the parable of the talents. It's found in Matthew 25, starting in verse 14.
"For it is just like a man to go on a journey. He called his servants and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent, depending on each one's ability. Then he went on a journey. Immediately the man who had received 5 talents went, put them to work, and earned 5 more. In the same way, the man with 2 talents earned 2 more. But the man who had received 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. The man who had received 5 talents approached, presented 5 more talents, and said, 'Master, you gave me 5 talents. See, I've earned 5 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Share your master's joy.' The man with 2 talents also approached. He said, 'Master, you gave me 2 talents. See, I've earned 2 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Share your master's joy.' The man who had received 1 talent also approached and said, 'Master, I know you. You're a harsh man, reaping where you haven't sown and gathering where you haven't scattered seed. So I was afraid and went off and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours.' His master replied to him, 'You evil, lazy servant. If you knew that I reap where I haven't sown and gather where I haven't scattered, then you should have deposited my money with the bankers, and I would have received my money back with interest when I returned. So take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have more than enough. But for the one who does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. And throw this good-for-nothing servant into outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
Okay, very fascinating parable. Let's walk through it here together. Starting in verse 14, it says this. It says, "For..." Okay, we need to stop right there. We didn't make it very far here. Whenever you see a "for" when you're studying the Bible or the word "therefore," you should always ask, what's it there for? This parable is part of a longer conversation that he's continuing that started at the beginning of Matthew 24 when the disciples pulled Jesus aside and they basically asked him, tell us about the end times. And Matthew was one of the disciples. So he has this sort of insider memory of this conversation they had with Jesus. You may want to go back and read Matthew chapter 24. Jesus spends the entire chapter sort of painting the picture of how things are going to unfold. Then at the beginning of chapter 25, he tells the parable about 10 bridesmaids who know the groom is coming to get the bride, but they don't know when. That was kind of a cultural thing for them. The groom would, or the future groom would go to the person he wanted to marry and say, I want to marry you. And then he would have to go back and build a room on their house for them to live in afterwards. It wasn't until the room was finished that he could go back and then actually have the wedding. And so the bridesmaids were always like, when is this wedding going to happen? They needed to be ready and they're supposed to be alert. But in the parable, they fall asleep. And then half of them don't have oil for their lamps and they have to wait at night. And so when the groom finally does return to pick up his bride, the bridesmaids, 5 of them who had forgotten their oil, they were at the store buying more and they ended up missing the entire celebration. Imagine you're getting married and half your bridesmaids don't show up. That's kind of what happens here. And so Jesus ends up the parable by saying, therefore, be alert. Because you don't know either the day or the hour, right? So the bridegroom is Jesus. That's a metaphor you'll see in the Bible. The bride of Christ is the church, and the bridegroom is going to return someday. We don't know when, but we do know it's going to happen. And Jesus says, you should be ready for that. Don't be sleeping. When he comes back, the word there actually is, in the Greek, is gregoreo, which literally means stay awake. I always think of like a soldier who's on duty at night. Rule number one is you got to remain awake. You got to pay attention because you don't know when the enemy's coming, which night that's going to happen, and you don't want it to be the one when you're sleeping. This is the same idea here, except it's not the enemy that's returning. It's the master. It's the groom. It's the King Jesus. Don't get caught unprepared. Be vigilant. So what does that mean for us to be alert, right? Am I drinking Red Bull, you know, and pulling an all-nighter? Or I got one eye open while I'm sleeping? Is that Jesus? Is that you, right? I was reading this other this article this week about the growing number of people who are investing millions of dollars in these doomsday bunkers. And so what happens is they buy these underground shelters in case of like a nuclear holocaust or some other apocalyptic event. They can retreat to this fully furnished and stocked with food sort of cave out in rural Kansas or South Dakota. And there's entire towns of these and people are just giving their money and this is where I'm going to go live if this happens. Is that what being alert means? I don't think so. But these are people that are like trying to be ready for something, right? And so to provide more clarity on what he means by that, Jesus tells this second parable, the parable of the talents. Therefore, be alert because you don't know either the day or the hour, for it is just like a man about to go on a journey. He called his own servants and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent, depending on each one's ability. Then he went on a journey. Now already, if you've been here for the other messages in this series, you know the master in these parables, that's Jesus, okay? And it fits the description that we saw of Jesus earlier. He's the man who's away on a journey, who entrusts his possessions or talents to his servants. He doesn't say what to do with those. He doesn't say when he's coming back. He just leaves. And so this is going to be a parable about how we live in the meantime, right? Jesus Christ, years and years ago, was crucified on the cross. He was raised from the dead, and then he ascended to heaven. He's at the right hand of the Father. Someday he's going to come back. We live in between those things, right? And so what do we do? How do we live? Now, there's been a lot of speculation about the talents. What do those represent? What we know for sure is they represent a large quantity of something. Because in the first century, a talent was a literal unit of weight. And a talent of gold was like, they said, one of the commentators said, it was like the size of a person. It's like over 100 pounds of gold. And so it's a lot of money. The amount is different based on the commentaries I've read, but each one believes it was somewhere between like $400,000 worth of gold to like several million dollars. One of those talents. So you got five of them. It's like could be like $10 million worth of stuff. And most of the scholars, they think the point Jesus was making that even the guy who got one talent was entrusted with way more than he could have ever imagined, right? Now, in terms of what these talents symbolize, there's some scholars that argue, well, if it's talking about money here, a talent, they were measuring money, so it's a parable about handling financial wealth. And some people are like, no, it's a like play on words. Like we use the word talent in our, you know, and so maybe it means like skills and abilities and that kind of a thing, actual talents. And other people say, no, it's so much, it's such an outpouring, 400,000 or 2 million, whatever it is, it must represent the gospel. That's what it represents. Now, I like what D.A. Carson said about this. He said, attempts to identify the talents with spiritual gifts, the law, natural endowments, the gospel, or whatever else leads to a narrowing of the parable with which Jesus would have been uncomfortable. Perhaps he chose the talent symbolism because of its capacity for varied application. In other words, his argument is anything God entrusts to us can fall under the umbrella of what a talent is, and you can apply it across the spectrum of those things. Whatever the talents are, here's what we know for sure. Number one, they're owned by the master. That's Jesus in the story. Number two, they're entrusted to his servants by the master. Number three is not everyone gets the same amount, and it's based on your ability to manage what you're going to be given. And then fourth is, and this is where we're about to see this, someday the servants will give an account on what did you do with what was entrusted to you. And so Jesus continues. The master leaves on the journey, and in verse 16 it says, immediately the man who had received 5 talents went, put them to work, and earned 5 more. In the same way, the man with 2 earned 2 more. But the man who had received 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. Okay, so 2 of the guys are shrewd. They invest what they receive, and they double their investment. That's pretty good. One of the guys is scared. He hides his talent, and I think if there was a 4th guy in the parable, he might be the guy who wastes his talent. I think that's a completely different parable, different teaching, but that could be there as well. If we use the broader definition of talent, that it can represent anything God has entrusted to us, I think as we study through this parable, we can already begin considering some important questions. What has the master entrusted to us? What has he entrusted you with? And are you leveraging what he's entrusted to you for his glory? Let's think about this for a moment. God has given us bodies. God has given us time. God has given us resources. God has given us relationships. God has given us wisdom and insight and skill and capacity and this fascinating world to live in, right? God has given us the gospel. God has given us life itself through the sacrifice of his own life. How much time do we spend just thanking God for his generosity toward us? Let's pause for a moment. When you think about all God has given you, what is your reaction? I feel grateful. That's my first reaction. Can we take a few moments just to give thanks? Just for maybe the next 15 seconds, find something or someone that God has put in your life or provided in your life, something that God has been generous toward you, and just take a few moments. We'll do 10 or 15 seconds just to be thankful. Lord, we are so grateful to you for your generosity toward us. In Christ's name, we pray. Amen. After feeling thankful, the second feeling that's simultaneous, I think, is I feel responsible. What an awesome privilege and opportunity, and kind of a little bit, you know, whoa, the of taking what he's given us and multiplying it for his glory. Here's how the parable continues. He leaves for the journey. The two guys invest. The one guy buries his talent. After a long time, the master of those servants came. Think about that for a moment. I wonder how long he was gone. It's after a long time. Was that 10 months? 17 years? He shows up. It's been a long time. He came and settled accounts with them. The man who had received 5 talents approached, presented 5 more talents and said, "Master, you gave me 5 talents. See, I've earned 5 more talents. And his master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Share your master's joy." The man with 2 talents also approached. He said, "Master, you gave me 2 talents. See, I've earned 2 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Share your master's joy." Now, maybe you've heard that statement, "Well done, good and faithful servant." That's pretty well known in Christian circles as kind of the goal of life, right? That as Christians, at the end of our lives, we would have lived in such a way that Jesus would look at us and say, "Well done. You've been faithful." Not that you've been perfect, got it all right and everything, but faithfulness, right? In this parable, the faithful person is the one who takes what the master gives and multiplies it. The 5-talent man and the 2-talent man, they paid attention. They were alert. They were intentional. They recognized that the stuff the master gave them, it was not theirs to keep, but theirs to invest for his gain. And so when he came back, they're like, "We've been waiting every single day to give this report." They were ready. "We took your 5 and we made it 10. We took your 2 and made it 4. And he's like, "Job well done. Share the master's joy." Now your other option is to hide your talent and return it to the master as you received it, unchanged. And so Jesus continues the parable. He has some opinions about that approach here in verse 24. The man who had received 1 talent also approached and said, "Master, I know you." Now, let's think about that for a second. That's an interesting thing he says. See if you think that's true as we read through the parable. He says, "I know you." Does he really know the master? "I know you. You're a harsh man, reaping where you haven't sown and gathering where you haven't scattered seed. You're a guy who expects to gain reward without doing the work, master. So I was afraid and went off, and I hid your talent in the ground. See, what you have is yours." Now, most parables have a twist, right? There's some kind of surprise element where the story's going in a certain direction, or you expect it to go in a certain direction, then whoop, it goes over here. And it's like, how did that happen? And so for me, This was that part of the story. The first guy takes the gift. He invests. Well done. Second guy takes the gift. Multiplies. Well done. And the third guy says, I was scared of you, master, because you're mean and you take advantage of your servants. And I didn't want to screw up. And so I didn't want to upset you. And so here's your stuff back. Now you expect the master to say, no, you're fine. It's okay. Because remember, it's Jesus telling the story about Jesus, right? And so you expect it to be like, hey, there's grace. I'm not harsh. Whoa, whoa. You know, it's fine. At least you didn't squander my stuff, right? Especially because of that, it's Jesus telling the story. There's no way he's going to portray himself as being harsh. I actually found myself wanting to defend Jesus here as I was reading the story, which is never a good position to be in. It's like, don't call Jesus harsh. That's not, he's kind, right? He's not reaping what he hasn't sown. He gave the guy the talents in the first place, right? He'll be the loving master. He'll be the patient one. That's the gospel, right? Well, let's see. Jesus continues. This is verse 26. His master replied to him, you evil, lazy servant. If you knew that I reap where I haven't sown and gather where I haven't scattered, then you should have deposited my money with the bankers and I would have received my money back with interest when I return. Now, I can't tell if Jesus is being sarcastic there. If you knew that I was supposedly this guy who reaped and didn't sow, then at least you should have put my money in the bank in a savings account. You could have gotten that 0.008% interest that you get with that, like your 17 cents a month that you get on your statement. At least do that, right? Or if he's really like, I am that guy, and if you knew I was that guy, then why didn't you do something about it? I can't tell, but I can tell that he's not happy with the guy. I know that for sure. He says, so take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have more than enough. But from the one who does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. And throw this good-for-nothing servant into the outer darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. All right, let's close in prayer. Okay. No, I mean, like, whoa. I mean, I just read that. I'm like, yikes. What do you do with that? I mean, did the guy who buried his talent in the ground go to hell? Is that what Jesus is saying? Now, in one sense, the answer to that question is no, because remember, this is a parable, and he's not even a real person, okay? And so there's a lot written about the eternal destiny of this fictional guy. He's not even a real guy. But is he saying that a person who does nothing with what God gives them, specifically the gospel, that that person will end up in hell? Honestly, yes. I do think that's what he's saying. Belief in Jesus matters most. This guy says, I know you, master. And then he went about his life as if he didn't. It didn't change him. Jesus has given us his very life, a treasure that is beyond compare. And those who bury it and then hand it back to Jesus without being changed by it will go away into eternal punishment. Now let's go back to where we started. Remember the picture. King Jesus is going to return. He's going to bring judgment. He's going to take his place on the throne. He's going to rule and reign for all of eternity. And my observation, starting with myself, in my life and in the lives of most people I know, is that we do not live our lives with the sense of urgency that those realities demand. We just don't. We don't live as though faith and faithfulness are a serious matter. And we don't live as though lives are literally at stake. Now, here's what he's not saying in this parable. He's not saying that we're saved by our works. You know, the two guys, they worked harder, they did better, and so that's what saved them, and the other guy didn't. And I had people between the services ask me, well, do you think that the third guy was a believer, the fictional third guy? And it's like, well, and did he lose his salvation? We know from other places in the Bible that's not what happened there. But what he is saying is Salvation is all by God's grace. That's all, or we know that. It's the gift of God. It's a free gift. It's all his doing. But that doesn't mean faithfulness doesn't matter, because clearly it does. And it brings us back to our original question. What does alert living mean? He says, therefore, be alert. You don't know when the master's coming back, right? Are you intentional? Are you leveraging your life for the gospel? Maybe for you, that just feels like, man, it's just a puzzle. How do I fit these pieces together? Well, let me just share one thing that struck me as a place to start. Because according to Jesus, in this chapter, our understanding of who the master is going to be particularly evident in our posture toward those who are in need, right? How you engage the hungry, the stranger, the sick, the prisoner is a reflection of your desire to follow and to be like Jesus, and your understanding of truly who your master is and where your heart is. It doesn't save you, but it does reflect something. Because not only did Jesus restore the broken, he himself was broken on our behalf. He was pierced for our transgressions, crushed because of our iniquities. We are healed by his wounds. And so the question of how can you invest your time, your body, your material resources, your relationships, your very lives, the gospel that God has given to you, how can you invest all of that in a way that shows broken people the love of Jesus? That's a really important question. So that when Jesus returns, we can say, hey, here's a bunch of people, a bunch more people. We've multiplied the number of people who know you because we were able to steward the gifts that you so generously gave us. I don't think the parable is saying, hey, I want you to have $400,000 so you can give me $800 back. Take the $400 and invest it in the eternal lives and security and future of other people. And so as the band returns to lead us, we're going to sing some more truth together. I want us to take another moment, a few seconds to reflect. And this time, think of one step, one person, one change in your thinking or your posture toward others that you can make even this week. Be specific if you can, that would point your life more directly and more clearly towards the actual future that's going to happen, towards the eternal things. Now, there's a couple things to think about there. You know, we have ministries here at Riverview that you can get involved with. We have a jail ministry of ministries working with poor people and different, specifically people in these actual categories. But then I'd also be thinking, okay, every single person that I encounter on a daily basis is a child of God and an opportunity. And we all are broken. Everybody around us, every interaction we have is an opportunity for us to do this, for us to reflect Jesus back to the people that we interact with. And so prayerfully, intentionally, you know, sometimes I walk around most of the days and everybody around me is kind of in my way, right? That's not really a gospel posture. Right? So what can I do to shift that? Maybe that's the step. Let's take a moment, whatever it is for you, to just reflect on that. You may want to write it down. You may want to tell someone. And then I'm going to close with one more verse here. First Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 1. A person should think of us in this way, as servants of Christ and managers or stewards of the mysteries of God. In this regard, it is required that managers be found faithful. So don't judge about anything prematurely before the Lord comes. He will both bring to light what is hidden in darkness and reveal the intentions of the hearts. And then praise will come to each one from God. Stand with me and let's sing some more together.